morning to you. 7:06 and a half now. News Talk 570 WAAX. It is Today with Jay here on the Big Wax. Thanks for joining us this morning. I have a guest, and we're going
to hopefully spend the next at least 15 or 20 minutes. Maybe it just depends on how the conversation goes. The content is excellent and something that I've been looking forward to talking with Curtis Greco about for, several days now. And good morning, Curtis. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Jay. I'm fabulous. And you?
Oh, things are good. I am really looking forward to talking a little basic economy type stuff with you. The economy is so important, and people take it so for granted. Usually it clicks along and is kind of a background concern, but today it's, and for the last several years, it's been upfront, in our face, and personal.
Well, one of the goals of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation and the work that I do in writing the books and that I've done is to really point out to the public that, you know, you're right. Most of us don't pay attention to the economy.
No.
It kind of goes along, and you figure things are fine as long as you've got money in the bank and things are clicking and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden, one day you wake up, and the cycle and the paradigm that you've been structured into believing was functioning turns out to be a complete mess. And, of course, it's a function of what? It's a function of a government that has designed itself to make a political response to a structural fault. And that's one of the reasons why we're in where we're in and the reason why we have the challenges that each of us are facing.
That's a great way to put it, Curtis, a political response to a structural fault. That's an interesting phraseology of saying that we're kind of trying to overkill this thing.
Well, one of the things that of many in the conflict that we face in the country today is I believe my observations show that I think that that we as a people have been cultured into a belief system that you can create wealth by creating debt. You can do stimulus packages as a substitute for economic health. You can give away money in the form of jobless benefits and call it economic stimulus. You can create...
Or welfare checks, according to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, yes, no, that's a whole new concept in thinking, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
But again, but here's the thing that troubles me about it, and I think you pick it up as many, and I'm sure others do, is think about the structural lunacy of this. We're going to give away $50 billion in jobless benefit extensions. Now, what I don't want people, your listeners, to think is that I'm saying toss our fellow Americans to the wind. There's two distinct issues here. One is a social issue, but more, there's a bigger issue, and there is this goes back to the opening comment, a structural fault.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this. We're going to give away $50 billion. And it's Nancy Pelosi, and this is not just a Democratic fault. This is a Republican fault.
Oh, sure.
Is going to tell you that this is going to stimulate the economy. But there's a fundamental question that nobody asks, and that is this. You give away $50 billion. You create $50 billion in debt. Now, at best, 3 to 7% of that $50 billion will come back to the U.S. Treasury in the form of tax revenues, which leaves us in the hole – okay,
mm-hmm.
in the whole approximately $41 billion in
mm-hmm.
debt
mm-hmm.
that didn't pay back the $50 billion you borrowed to give away.
Sure.
So, there's all of these really goofy sort of things out there, but we're in what they could have done and what we should be doing instead of making these impulse responses, which the Republicans and Democrats are notorious for doing. Why is it that instead of taking the low road, we don't sit back and say, wait a second, there is a structural fault in our economy. Why is it we aren't focusing on that? And
mm-hmm.
taking the $50 billion, if you're going to spend the money, why not? I call it the sunflower seed metaphor. And the sunflower seed metaphor is if you eat your sunflower, you forgo the possibility of taking the other 5,000 seeds and seeding them for future sunflower seed growth, right?
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
And it's a pretty basic economic principle,
mm-hmm.
that is that you propagate wealth by creating the machinery that creates wealth, but we don't do that. And that's part of the job issue, that's part of the economic issue, and a lot of the things that I talk about in our conversations with this notion that – you know, what we really should be doing is tossing out this failed paradigm and go back to the ideas that work, go back to the system that creates economic wealth. I have a paradigm or a concept, of an economic theory concept that's really quite simple, and you being a student of economics will appreciate this. And it's through, we talk about this in the book series, and it goes simply like this. When you have a wealth-creating economy that exceeds wealth consumption, you have a vibrant economic engine. When you have wealth consumption exceeding wealth creation, you have a dying economic paradigm.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Pretty basic, right?
Very basic.
And yeah. You don't have to be an MIT graduate or a Harvard graduate in economics.
That's right.
Understand that at the end of the month, at the end of the week, if your paycheck isn't meeting your debt or capital requirements, you've got a systemic problem.
No question about it, and we are there. My guest is Curtis Greco. He is the author of the Blind Vision books and the founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Greg, before we go on, tell us a little bit about that and how we can get in touch and so on and so forth.
Well, the Imperfect Messenger Foundation is an organization I created to basically house a conversation that I say the country needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
And the Blind Vision series is one of the products of the efforts of the foundation. Of course, I wrote it. It's a three-part series. Book one is, and of course, Blind Vision is the master title of the entire series. Each book has its own topic and each title. The first one is We Hold These Truths. Book
yeah.
two is Value Given, Value Received, and book three is Valor and Prosperity. The three books take a fundamental look at, you know, for example, the title of book one, We Hold These Truths, gets to the fundamental heart of what is the United States? Why does the United States exist? Why did it become? Why it's so important in human history?
Mm-hmm.
Value Given, Value Received takes a look at the economic paradigms of what is it that made the U.S. work? What has caused it to fail? Book three, Valor and Prosperity, takes an overall look of condensing one and two into a response that says, okay, Curtis, you've made these points. They sound great. We can see why we've ended up where we're at. What do we do now? So book three focuses on the concept that there is valor and prosperity and talks about specific game plans, specific strategies that we could be looking at and should be pursuing in the course of reconstituting an economically vibrant America. And that's what the book series does. Now, of course, you know, the books are available in all your typical places. You can go to the website, theimperfectmessenger.com. There's some excerpts that we've pulled out of the books that you can download for free.
Cool.
You can follow the blogs. You know, we're on Facebook. We do Twitter. We do all that stuff. And the blogs are extraordinarily well done. They come from a variety of different observations. And it gives folks a great place to go to get a completely outside-the-box perspective of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And at least, of course, you know, it's from my perspective. I don't proselytize the issues. There's no body-slamming of Democrats or body-slamming of Republicans. You know, because I find that an exercise in futility.
It is. But there are a lot of people out there, Curtis, that you know and I know that live and breathe and exist on nothing but that. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, this is one of the things that I got into during the last midterm election cycle when I wrote an article about the failure of the Tea Party concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to say that the Tea Party concept's a failure. The problem with the Tea Party concept and the problem with politics today is we take a political view to a structural problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what it becomes is mm-hmm. political football.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what we've just done or what's about to be done under the name of extending the quasi or so-called Bush tax cuts. What the Democrats and Republicans have effectively or are effectively about to do is take a critical issue that is facing this country and politicizing it and basically deferring it to the next presidential election, 2020.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking with Curtis Greco. He's the author of Blind Vision book series and has created or founded the Imperfect Messenger Foundation, imperfectmessenger.com. Curtis, I have heard this term used so many times till I'm just sick of it. Normally, it's a good economic term. But as you have mentioned and as you have pointed out, we have now used this term so much as a political football that it really doesn't mean anything anymore, especially the way they calculate unemployment. But jobs, Everybody wants jobs, but nobody wants to do what it's necessary to create jobs and have our economy begin the process of replacing the jobs that we've lost, which is unbelievable, and then to continue our slow and painful recovery. That's what it's apparently going to be. So you have some definite ideas about jobs that go along with some of the things that I believe we're going to have to do. We're going to have to get tough. We're going to have to really restructure our government. But tell us some of your ideas from the Imperfect Messenger and the Blind Vision books and your own thought about how we do create these jobs, really create good jobs, really create jobs.
Yeah, no, really is a really good way of putting it. And
yeah.
And it's going to take a completely different view on what constitutes jobs creation. For example, remember from our opening, as your audience will remember from the opening statement, which was, you know, we take a structural view, or we take a political response to a structural view.
Yeah.
For example, and these are completely outside the box. People talk about this class warfare thing about the rich, right?
Class war. I talk about it every day. It's so petty.
Yeah, it's this idea that, you know, somehow the rich is this monstrous group that's sitting out there that is, you know, oppressing the poor, right? it's really not how it happens. What happens is there are two distinct classifications of economy. There's the native economy, and there's what I call the Uber economy. And there's a great article on the website that deals with this and talks about this concept called the Uber economy. The native economy, these are two really fundamental concepts that we've got to get down. The native economy is the economy exists in the absence of government. It's the concept of, demand in search of supply.
It's the concept of demand in search of supply. Yeah, I got
right.
you. Okay.
It's the basic engine, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that when they talk about in the political arena that the United States is a very vibrant and durable economy, it's true, but it's not the government that makes that. It's the average American person, and I don't mean averages in the perspective of ordinary. The people in this country that do the living, the breathing, the dying, and the working are not average people. These are extraordinary individuals that want nothing more than an environment to be productive.
Sure.
That's the job of what the Constitution and the Conflab, or the Confederation of States, designed when they signed on to this global, U.S. global, the government, national government. So, and you get into this idea, and I talk about this because it's important that folks understand that wealth creation is a product of a economic cycle, not a product of government intervention. This country is not a free market capitalist entity. It is a controlled economic environment. It is a manipulated economic environment, and the result of which gives you crazy things like vibrant and radical economic cycles, these boom and bust circumstances that are driven specifically because we are no longer a productive economic engine, but in fact we live off of transactional income. You know, transactional income meaning, you know, what happens in Wall Street is a perfect example of that. There's no wealth created in Wall Street. There is only income generated by the transactions that occur in Wall Street, and it's concentrated there. It never filters to the rest of the economy. So we need to get into some real basic ideas, and here they come.
Let me pause just for a moment and hold that thought there for a second. We're talking with Curtis Greco, author of Blind Vision book series, and the Imperfect Messenger Foundation, who he founded and created to help address some of these economic problems that we seem to be having such a hard time with, basic concepts like, you know, demand searching for supply. You know, is so basic. But, Curtis, somehow we've managed to at least begin the process of killing the goose that laid the golden egg. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Perfect example is we have this notion that happened this last week where Obama jubilantly expressed delight of creating a trade agreement with South Korea.
Yeah.
Sounds great in principle, but let's remember something. South Korea has only 50 million people in it. California has a state has 39 million in it. Okay, now how much consumption can a country of 50 million people actually absorb to create an economic or a stimulant response to the U.S. economy as a whole? I'll argue that it's microscopic at best.
I was going to say practically nothing.
I mean, it'll be concentrated in a few localized areas.
Sure.
And, you know, but you know, this gets to the point of what's happened.
Yeah, this is a $14 trillion economy.
Yeah. When, you know, and here's the joke of it. You know, U.S. economy's $14.7 trillion estimate from the 2009 figures. Only $3 trillion of it is actual wealth creation. That is the manufacturing base and the agricultural base, including mine output. So that's $3 trillion out of nearly $15 trillion that's actually supporting a what is the remainder, which is approximately a $12 trillion GDP.
Mm-hmm.
There's an imbalance there. It's unsustainable. And people need to know that when they talk about a $14.7 trillion GDP, that's including government spending.
Yeah.
Which amounts for approximately, well, if you'll have to go off budget items and so on, but the effectively two-thirds of the economy is in effect government spending or this concept that we've called the service-based economy, which is actually not wealth creation, but in fact, it's actually wealth consumption.
Mm-hmm.
But we get into this idea of some of these job concepts. Let's talk about that for a minute, if it's okay.
Sure.
Number one, we've got to get out of the idea of taxing individual income. There's two distinct types of income that occur in the United States. There's income that is active income. That's what you earn when you show up to work day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
There is passive income. Okay. Presently in the United States, we tax almost exclusively active individual income. We've
mm-hmm.
got to get away from that.
Which essentially is, and I call it a-taxing, you know, your basic drive to do better. So in other words, when you do better, you're taxed more, you know.
Right. Yeah, and
so it's a disincentive to do better.
It's punitive.
Yeah.
Okay?
There you go.
We talk about this idea of taxing the rich. We have to get away from that. What we need to start talking about is generating revenues for the government within the confines of what the government should be doing, not what it is presently doing, and force the government to live by the same standards that the average American does. What I refer to is not the middle class. I call it the productive class.
There you go.
So I believe that what we need to do is we completely restructure the tax system to do some of the following things, and we would do it in some examples which we'll go into. First, we got to get away from taxing individual income under $250,000 at the best. I mean, ideally I'd like it to be more, but let's just say $250,000, and I mean completely tax-free. That income needs to be relieved on that level, if not better, on the active income of a household, because right now we're spending the average dollar of revenue generated by the average household in the United States, approximately 80% of it, or 80 cents of every dollar, is being consumed in some form of tax revenue generating mechanism.
Wow.
How do we generate an economically vibrant cycle in the most productive component of the U.S. economy when 80 cents of every dollar is being extracted out of the system? So that's number one.
Yeah, you can't. That's the answer.
Well, it's absolutely ludicrous. Number two, one of the problems with job creations is that we've accommodated the idea of corporate form as being an animate object. A corporation is an inanimate entity that creates income from an economic cycle.
Okay? Sure.
It this notion of, you know, recently I did a show with another host, and we got into the discussion about somewhat argumentative about my observation that said the banking system should have been allowed to fail, that General Motors should have never been bailed out. And they were talking about this idea that, oh my gosh, you know, you would take away General Motors. And I said, well, wait a second. What we're doing now in our present tax system is we are subsidizing corporate failure.
Sure.
We are using tax revenues that are being largely generated off of the general public. In the 40s, 52% of the revenues generated by the federal government for tax revenues was coming out of the corporate enterprises, 10% out of the public. Today, it's the complete reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Individuals are paying close to 60% of the revenue generated by the federal government and corporations at 10%. We are actually creating tax incentives for corporations to be successful. Now, I ask you, going back to the concept of native economy, what would be the purpose of sustaining an economic enterprise that is economically unsustainable? If it is not producing value, such as General Motors, if it's not creating an economic value, why would you ever take U.S. tax revenue dollars generated off the backs of the U.S. individual to subsidize an economically unsustainable enterprise? Makes absolutely no sense to me. But yet, when you look at General Motors' success outside the United States, when it was bailed out, none of those enterprises were attached to the bailout. So General Motors Europe, General Motors Asia, General Motors Australia still exists, and the taxpayer does not benefit from it. So
yeah,
you have these massive global enterprises that do this. But one of the things that I think, the next thing I think we need to look into is we've got to get unions away from controlling the political process and the economic process. I'm not saying unions can't exist, but you should not have to pay bounty to work. And a union does not add value to the economic cycle. Why do we allow unions on the private level and the public level, the government level? Look at most of the states in the U.S. One of the single largest economic burdens to the state budgets are generated by this concept called collective bargaining that has
mm-hmm.
been mandated.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it we are allowing a parasitic entity to further burden the economic process? Again, I'm not saying unions shouldn't exist, but I think unions, like any economic enterprise, needs to show value, needs to make a productive contribution. But in either case, it should not be a mandate.
We're talking with Curtis Greco. He's the author of Blind Vision in his book series, Blind Vision, and he is the founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation, imperfectmessenger.com. And speaking of things economic, Curtis, we have a couple more minutes left, and you've touched on union participation. I think your position is that it should be optional rather than mandated, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no, I mean, there's just, it's, the concept is so completely counter to the ideas that have been espoused in a country such as the United States, where we profess that we're a nation of freedom-loving, law-abiding citizens, yet our political and economic entity has morphed into this machinery that now says that freedom is available only to the extent that the option becomes made available to you to select. But in reality, what we find in our political system and in our economic system, that in fact what we have is freedom is not even among the options available. You don't have the choice if you're a teacher, if you're a manufacturer, if you're working on an assembly line someplace, if
sure.
you're working in the hotel industry. You don't have the option. You have to participate in these entities. So I'm kind of, there's a conflict in all that. But
well,
getting
Curtis, let me ask you quickly about a couple other things, and we're gonna have to run. I know you've got a lot of other things going on as well too. But there's a situation here that I've always called corporate welfare. We touched on it slightly, but you know, every state now is competing for these huge corporations, and they're paying every kind of quote incentive unquote that you can imagine. I'd like to ask you very quickly about that, and then. If you can, just touch on some of these massive government organizations like EPA and some of these other, you know, radically active government organizations that are being used as essentially a billy club over the American public.
Oh, excellent points. You know, this gets to that question on the corporate welfare system. This gets back to that issue of passive versus active income.
Yeah.
Corporations, one of the key ways that the government can attack this problem, and it addresses your specific question about states having to chase these and give away on the back of the taxpayer in
yeah.
order to entice corporations. Corporates is the wrong approach. A corporation must be an economically self-sustaining entity. Otherwise, there's no need for it to exist. If it's
exactly.
not producing an economic value, then why is it there? This should be a good question for folks to ask about the government when they talk about protectionism and so on, and they say, well, protectionism is a bad thing. Well, wait a second. If you're not going to protect the economic interest of the American people, then I don't need you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not creating value.
Exactly.
Corporations, same thing. If you are not going to be an economic engine that provides job creation capacities in the United States, then why is it we're subsidizing you? So I think that this gets to that issue of one of the quick ways of addressing this issue is reinventing the tax code and doing it in such a way as to entice corporations to be investors in the U.S. economy. And you do this by using the tax code to incentivize corporate redevelopment in the United States. And by doing that, you take this trillions and trillions of dollars that have been accumulated as liquid reserves in American-based corporations, and instead of it sitting there idly and being used to subsidize their foreign investments, force them through the tax code to reinvest in the United States. That simple fact, that simple task, completely can eliminate the problem on the state levels to entice corporations to come and employ in those states. The question about your second question about these government entities,
yeah.
I call this the overbite of government. This is that overburden-like unions, the overburden that gets placed on corporations that basically make an economic decision that say, look, I'm not going to deal with the EPA. I'm not going to deal with this OSHA nonsense. I'm not going to deal with the problems with the Internal Revenue Service and the archaic tax code. It's much more economically viable. Great term. You unemploy U.S. Americans, but you send the employment offshore, and you call that economic viability.
Yes.
But, you know, to get to the point, and I know we're running out of time, but basically the overbite of the political system, again, needs to be addressed. And you address it by taking instead of making a political response to a structural problem, you make a strategic and surgical response to a structural problem. And that's where the argument and that's where the discussion needs to start, as attacking the problem at its root cause, not creating another problem through a political response.
Wow. Curtis, we're going to have to do this again.
I'd love to, Jay. It's a great topic, isn't it?
It is so typical of what's going on today. If people will just have the courage to really think about and understand what you're saying, it makes such great sense. We have clouded this issue.
Yeah, it's a conversation that needs to be had, and we can do this. I invite folks to come and participate in the work that we do at the Foundation, read the books, follow the blog, and I look forward to the opportunity to spend time. I'm grateful to you for the work that you do, and I look forward to sharing the time with you again.
Well, Curtis, the feeling is mutual. It's imperfectmessenger.com. Imperfectmessenger.com. Go there today and engage. We've got to get this discussion more out there. Would you agree, Curtis?
That's right. That's why I say at the Imperfect Messenger, we are changing the conversation because you, too, are a messenger.
Amen, brother. Curtis, God bless you. Look forward to our next conversation. Hopefully it'll be pretty soon. I'll be in touch.
Love to do it. Bless your heart. All the best to you and your audience, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, my friend.
Take
God
care.
Bless. Curtis Greco.